What does the price of rice have to do with Har Sinai? Parshas Bahar is called Bahar because Vidaber Hashem el Moshe b'Har Sinai lemor. Hashem spoke to Moses on Har Sinai saying, what was he saying? The Torah then delineates all the halachas of Shemitah. So why here specifically we come at the end of Sefer Vayikra, Torah's Kayanim, and then we start talking about Sinai? Rashi brings Chazal, and the Mefarshim explain that it's coming to teach us a principle. That just like we see by Shemitah, the resting of the land, that it was taught with Klalius, with general things, and then Pratius specifications, and that was taught at Sinai, Har Sinai, like we see the Torah specifying Har Sinai, so too all halachas were said at Sinai in a general sense, with the general halachas, and then in a specific sense. So that's an answer that's given in Chazal. However, it seems to be not an answer to the question. Because really, we could have taken any set of halachas. We could have taken the halachas of the Beis HaMikdash. We could have taken all the halachas in Parshas Mishpatim. We could have taken many, many different sets of halachas, explain them in the fullest extent, in their totality, and then their specifications, put that and say that was said at Sinai, and we would say just like Hilchos Halva'ah are said in the general sense and the specifications, so do all halachas are said in the general sense and the specifications. So why specifically here do we bring Shemitah? We had a question, why Shemitah? We said because general and specific, so too everything is general and specific. But the question still begs that why in the world is the Torah specifying Shemitah to bring out that rule that Shemitah was said at Har Sinai, so too everything else was said at Har Sinai. What is so fundamental, critical, key about Shemitah that it's specifically chosen to be put by Har Sinai? You go on in the Parsha, and we find that, what is Shemitah? Shemitah is a Shavas Lashem. What does it mean it's a Shavas Lashem? It says when you come into the land, have a Shavas Lashem. It should be a resting for Hashem. What's the Torah trying to bring out here? Where do we find these languages in other places? And if you just pay attention to the context of Shemitah, what happens? Shemitah is 7 years. And then you have seven cycles of seven. And then that leads to the Yovel. What is this idea of the sevens? We similarly find that we have 6 days. The seventh is Shabbos. We have 7 weeks of counting Sfiras HaOmer that lead to Shavuos, Matan Torah. Zava, we find seven. She counts seven clean days. Zav, seven clean days. What is this big concept of sevens that we're always counting? You have the six, and that leads into the seventh. Sheish yamim, sheish shanim. What is this idea that we keep finding, repeating in the Torah, that we have these cycles of seven? Seems very interesting. And in addition to the point that we have of seven, we have that the seven leads into the yovel. What is this idea that the Shemitah builds up to the Yovel? How do we understand the Shemitah? And then how are we going to understand the Yovel in the context of what the Shemitah is? If you go to the end of Parshas Bahar, you find something fascinating. We're talking about all these different ideas. And what does it lead into? It leads into don't serve Avodah Zarah. Keep my Shabbos, Tishmoiru, guard them, and Mikdashai, Tirau, revere, fear, have awe of the Beis HaMikdash. So, it's very puzzling. What does that have to do with the beginning of the Parsha of Har Sinai that we're wrapping up with these three things specifically? What's the finishing off of this Parsha? And that leads into the next thing, Bichul Goytzai. Besides it being the next Parsha, we always want to understand the connection from one Parsha to the next Parsha. Here, these two parshas are always wrapped up together. They're constantly put together as a double parsha. So what's the connection in a general sense of one to the next? And then how are they always grouped together? And the end of Bahar is going to somehow lead into Bukhai Sai. These three things lead straight into Bukhai Sai. That you have to, as we know, Rashi says, Amelim Batayra, Bukhai Sai Teilechu, go in my ways, explains Rashi. That means you have to harbor and harve in the Torah. You have to work at it. You have to be connected to it. That's somehow connected to the ideas of Shemitah, of Yovel, of the seven, and then wrapping that up with what's happening at the end of Avodah Zarah, Shabbos, and guarding the base of Mikdash. Why are those three things placed at the end over here? Seems like they're ideas we've talked about many times, and they're very obvious. And then you go and talk about Meir B'Taira. How was that connected to those? What is the flaw? What's the tapestry, this picture the Torah is painting? And what happens if you're not a Melam B'Torah? The Torah says if you are, you get a bunch of brachas. And if you're not, klala after klala after klala, many sets of punishments. And if you focus in the Torah, in the rebuke that Hashem is giving us for not keeping the Torah in its fullest, for not being a Melam B'Torah, following in his ways, there's a focus, the Torah keeps saying. You were with me, Bekeri. Halachta imi Bekeri. You went with me, Keri means some sort of happenstance, not set in. What is this Torah's focus that it has two Teichas, and then it switches the last, I think, five of you were with me, Bekeri, Halachta Bekeri, Halachta Bekeri, Halachta Bekeri. First you weren't available, Torah, and then Halachta Bekeri, Halachta Bekeri, Halachta Bekeri. What's the stress here that the Torah has of Alachdim Bikari, and how did that relate to the first two times the Torah first rebuked us and said it's going to punish us, Hashem is going to punish us? How did that relate to the Alachdim Bikari, which then becomes the riding principle throughout? What is that idea, and how do we come back from it? How do we learn from it? How do we go from it? And when you finish off the whole entire Torah's Kayanim, what do you have? You have Maiser Behema, Maiser Tavua, tithing, taking a tenth off of your produce, your hard work, giving it to Hashem. Your animals, you raise them. You know, people know, you always say, your kids are acting crazy. They say, people say, that kid's acting like an animal. These people were really raising animals. It is no simple task. Animals are hard to raise. And then you go and you give the tithe, you give it to Hashem. Why is that the end of the whole entire Sefer Vayikra? What's called in Chazal, Torah's Kayanim. How is that a siyum, a finishing off, a wrapping up of the concepts we talk about? Torah's Kayanim is primarily dealing with a focus on the Kayanim, their Avodah, the Avodah in the base of Mikdash, their clothing, what they do, how they relate to us. So why is that finishing off, the finale, the climax, with tithing animals? That's literally the end. How is that going to wrap up and encapsulate, crystallize the ideas that we're supposed to learn from the Kayanim? There was a story once with Rev. Rafal Levine Zatzal, Rev. Aya Levine's son. He was a Yerushalmi Yid, and he was very, very careful with Kiddush HaShvius. His wife had a maid, and we all know that a maid for a Jewish lady is like the oven. It's like you have a family and you need help Erev Shabbos. If you lose the maid, it's not a pretty sight. It's one of the Aseres Hadibros amongst Jewish housewives. Don't steal your friend's maid. If you steal your friend's maid, that's like a break in the Yiddishkeit itself, in the Yahadus of a lady and her fellow Jew. So they had this maid who was helping them, a non-Jewish lady, and she said she's leaving. That's it. She has to go back to her hometown, wherever she was from. She can no longer serve them. So they were expecting this. One day she abruptly says, okay, I'm leaving today. I just got a telegram. I was going to leave next week. I'm leaving today. So Rebbetzin Levine, of Paul Levine's wife, says, okay, sure, take an apple. She takes the apple for the way. She runs out. A couple of minutes later, Paul Levine walks in. And Rebbetzin's distraught. She just lost her maid. What's going to be with the Shabbos? What's going to be after Shabbos? And she mentions to her husband, yeah, on the way out, you know, I didn't want her to go hungry. So I gave her an apple. And his face drops. He says, an apple? She goes, yeah, I gave him an apple. He says, the apple was Kedusha Shvius. You gave a non-Jewish lady a Kedusha Shvius apple? How could you do that? And the Rebbetzin realizes how distraught her husband is, how this very precious holy item that came from the year of resting of the Jewish people that was given to a non-Jewish person. And she immediately, without him even saying anything, runs out the door. Boom! And she's running to where the bus station. And she sees, as she's getting there, she sees the maid climbing on a bus. And she's running, she's sweating, she has to get this apple back. She gets to the bus and the door closes. She bangs, no, let me on. And the bus driver feels her plea, lets her on. She doesn't know where the bus is going, she doesn't care. She has to get that apple back. She pays for a ticket, and she is looking, where is this lady? She sees in the back corner, left corner of the bus, second seat over, there's the maid. She is ecstatic, but she sees the maid goes white like a ghost. So she starts getting word for her. She goes, maybe she's sick. She runs up to her, and before Rebbetzin Levine could say one word, the maid says, here you go, I'm so, so sorry. She's like, whoa, how did she realize it was Kedusha Shvius apple? And then I came to get it. Like, how could she even know that? How could she think of that? And Rebbetzin Levine sees that it was a bag, but it didn't have the apple. It had jewelry and a lot of money in it. And Rebbetzin Levine realizes that this bag was the hidden bag in their house of their life savings, of all her precious items, which they were saving up this money for their children's wedding. And the maid now is giving it back, and the maid is in tears. She goes, I'm so sorry, just take it back. The Rebbetzin realized that when the maid left originally because she got a telegram, it was no telegram. It was, I found the money in your house, and I want to run out before you realize, before your husband gets home. Rebbetzin Levine thanked her. She took the apple back, and she took the bag back. How was she zoicha to this? How did she merit such a Yeshua? Because of the tamimiskite, the oneness, the living, the ein oid mavadoi, the living that I am with Hashem. There's a Kedusha Shvius item. There's an apple imbued with holiness. There's an apple imbued with Hashem's presence. I have to do everything I can to make sure that it retains its status, that the halachas are kept about it, that I appreciate the Kedusha in it. This is attaching to Shvius, and this is the lesson we have to learn in our lives. What is Shvius? What is Shemitah? Shemitah, Shvius, the land laying fallow, is the ultimate expression of the Ein Oid Mavad. That there's nothing else but Hashem. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, says the Siva Shalom, that when I keep Shvius, I'm bringing back what was at Sinai. What was at Sinai? What was at Har Sinai? What was at that mountain? That was a recognition that there's nothing else in the world besides the Kodesh Baruch Hu, that there's only the Ein Oid Lavad. That's what they saw. Hashem spoke, and they saw the complete revelation. Hashem showing himself, the existence of the Bari Olam in every single bit of this world. Malach al Arz Kavod. That's what they saw at Har Sinai. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, and this is Shemitah. Says Siv Shalom, this is Shemitah. I do something, it makes no sense logically. I should let my land sit for a year. I can't explain it in any way, shape, or form. The only way that I can live this reality is if I have a complete trust, a complete feeling, and Hashem completely in my sights. That's the Eino Mavada. That's what I experience at Har Sinai. When I live Shemitah, I'm experiencing the Eino Mavada. I'm experiencing that the reason that I follow the Torah is not because of a specific benefit that I can get here, that I can get there, that I can understand this, that, you know, kosher food's good for you. It's for one reason. It's because Hashem said so. And Hashem is the absolute reality. That's Shavas LaHashem. I rest, but I'm not resting just because I can justify it. It's for Hashem. Everything is for Hashem. Shemitah, we said, works in cycles of seven. And so does Fiyas Omer, and so does Zava, and the Yovel leads up to the Yovel, and so does Shabbos. Seven, it represents the world we live in. It represents the physical reality, 7 days a week. As the Kuzari says, everyone believes in seven. Far out people, maybe in Asia, they say at different points in time, had an eight-day week or a nine-day week. But at this point, and for the majority of time, the majority of the world always worked in sevens. That represents nature. Shemitah, Shabbos, Yovel, they're all coming to tell you that your seven has to be driven through into every bit of it with the Ein Olam Vaday. That's Shemitah. And that's what we have to live. That leads up to the Yovel. Says the Meshech Chachma, Shemitah is Shabbos. Shabbos is Ein Olam Vaday. It's Chidush HaOlam. It's I take a step back and Hashem runs the show. The fruits that come out, they're holy because they're filled with Hashem's presence. I can't affect them in any way, shape, or form. I can't sell them. I can't abuse them. I can't trubus amaj them. I can't tie them. I can't do anything. They're completely pristine for Hashem. That's Shemitah. Says the Meshech Chachma, what's Yovel? Yovel is like Yom Tov. Yom Tov's where Klal Yisrael is apart. We're Mekadesh the Chadashim. Hashem's Mekadesh the Shabbos. We're Mekadesh the Chadashim. We make the Yom Tovim. What do? At Yovel, we don't just take a step back like Shemitah and just let it be. We blow a shofar, which represents our Mesiras Nefesh from Yitzchak, that we are willing to give up everything actively. We are sheleach, our avadim. We send out our slaves and we give back the properties we brought. This all happens at Yovel. It's not just taking a step back. It's me actively living the expression of the Ein Olam Vaday. A person cannot just have the ideology. They have to take and bring that into every aspect of their lives. That's what we have to do with Yovel. And that's what we do with our lives. The Shemitah, 7 days a week, goes, and it becomes part of your reality. Your actions, you blow the shofar, you send out your avadim, you get back your land, because I now experience in the highest level that nothing is mine, and I will actively pursue that. Everything's Hashem's, and I will always live that. Mine? No. Hashem's? Yes. That's the Yovel, where I take my active part, as clear in the Meshech Chachma. The end of the parsha wraps up in Bahar with three things: Avodah Zarah, Shabbos, and Mikdash HaTirah. Says the Svarno, don't think when you're in Galus, you're under the Memshala, the control of the other nations, that you're lost. I'm under their control. Hashem's not with me. No, you're still Hashem's avadim. You're still Hashem's slaves. You're still Hashem's children. Never think you're the slaves, the family, the community of the Ummah Sa'olam, the other nations of the world. And then you'll get strayed in Avodah Zarah, in their foreign ideologies. You always have to be rooted that you are the Eved Hashem, that you are the slave of Hashem, that you have the ultimate ability within you to attach and bring infinity into this world. That's what he says, that don't do Avodah Zarah. Don't get wrapped up in their ideologies because you're under their control. You're always under Hashem's control. You are never under the nation of the world's control. You are never under the ultimate persuasion of anything except for the Torah Kedusha. That is what it's teaching you at the end of Parshat Bahar. Don't do Avodah Zarah. Don't get wrapped up in their ideologies. Wrap yourself in the blanket of Hashem's light because you're His children. You're His slaves. You're His people. Keep the Shabbosos. Remember what makes you free when you are amongst other nations and you're under their control. We're in Golos, we're in exile, we're not in our homeland. Shabbos. Shabbos sets a person free. Shabbos allows a person to experience viscerally on a weekly basis that he's in Hashem's hand, that he's in Hashem's palm, that Hashem's taking care of him. That's your freedom, Shabbos. When you're in exile, no, you have Shabbos. And lastly, don't think that just because the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, that you don't have holy places. Mikdash Hayti Ra'u, say Chazal, that a person must revere, make holy, and give honor to the Batei Knesios and the Batei Midrashos, to our holy shuls, our holy Batei Midrashim. We must give them respect, care, and love. Because even when we're in exile, we have a Mikdash Ma'at right here in this show. So says the Svarna, you take all the ideas of the Eino Mevadoi, of the Yovel, of us having Kedusha in this world, of bringing that in here, the Shemit of the Yovel, and you bring it into you with Galus, never let go. But how do I retain it? How do I keep that Svarna? How do I keep the Torah? How do I keep these ideas even when I'm in Galus? Says the Torah, Amelim b'Torah. You go in my ways, you harve in the Torah. You put your guts into it. What does that do? Says the Baal HaTanya. The Torah is mazon. Mazon is sustenance. You have clothing which are external to you. You wrap yourselves in them. You embody yourselves in them. But then there's something you make a part of your body, and that's food. Torah is the mazon for the soul. You take Hashem's realities. You take Hashem's perspectives, you take the way that He sees everything, and you make that a part of your mind. And in essence, you are melding Hashem's essence, Hashem's reality, Hashem's truth with your mind. That's mazon. It becomes your nourishment. It becomes one with you. It's not external. If a person does that, then this could be in Gemara B'Iyun. It could be if you're learning an art scroll. It could be learning Chumash. As long as you're putting yourself into it and you're making it a part of you, that's the Amelim B'Torah. If we do that, we will keep everything through all the Goliaths, through all the exiles, we'll live the Einam Levadai, we'll live the Shemitah. A person can't live these ideas of Bitachon in its own place. They can't just be on an idea. And even they can't even just try and live the reality. I'll remove myself from the work. I'll trust in Hashem. I'll live in Eino Mevadoi. I'll mekadesh things. The only way you can do that is if you're making Hashem's reality your reality with the Torah. You need the laws. You need the understanding. You need the truth of the way Hashem expressed them in His holy Torah to be ingrained into your mind, to become one with you, to meld it together, to weld it together, to have that beautiful Torah-shaped mind, Torah perspective, Adas Torah. That's the Amelim B'Torah. That's the only way a person can keep the existence of the Muna B'Tachon, can keep the existence of the Kedusha of Yovel, can keep in all the Goliaths only if he takes the Torah and he makes it one with him. What happens if we don't do that? If we chas v'shalom lose our Torah learning, then we lose everything. That's our relationship with Hashem. That's us, as Rav Chaim Zev Milinowitz Tzatzal, the head editor of Art School, used to say, it's dating Hashem. It's making Him one with you. It's getting to know him. If you lose that relationship, if you stop learning Torah, then everything goes. And Hashem says, where are you? Hashem says, what's going on with you? He starts sending you messages. If a person misses his wife's birthday, her anniversary, their wedding date, he comes home, she wants to send him a message. She's upset. She doesn't make dinner. So he comes, he looks in the fridge, says, oh, I found some deli, schmack. He takes sandwich, makes a schmack deli sandwich, and he goes, you want some? She goes, no. Okay, fine. I'm sure she found something else to eat. She's seething. She gave one warning, didn't take it. The next day, he comes home, and he sees there's no dinner again. So he goes into the freezer, gets a potato knish, gets some nice Dijon mustard, finds some soda, maybe a yogurt for some protein. And he goes, hey, honey, you want something? You want a knish? There's a few left over. She goes, no. He comes home the third day, and his bed is moved on to the front yard. He realizes that he was missing the messages of the past 2 days. He didn't ask his wife what happened at this point. He realized that he missed the two messages. It says the Torah. Halachti imi bekeri. Targum Unkelus explains. Bekeri means I sent you messages. I tried to tell you that I'm yearning for you. I'm missing you and I'm in pain. And you're not there. As John Gottman says, one of the conservative Yid who's a marriage therapist, he says that a fight is always a calling for connection. Hashem sends us two waves of punishments in the Teichacha, and we don't take them. Hashem says, I'm yearning for you, and you're not coming back to me. I'm yearning for you to date me again. I'm yearning for you to put me inside your mind again, to have that connection with you, and you're not. And then comes the harsh punishments, and that's what keeps coming. Take the signs in our life. Hashem sends us messages. Hashem sends us signals. Hashem shows us that He's yearning for us. Let's take it. Take the signs. But where does it all come from? That we're not taking in our lives enough the Einam Levadoi, the Shemitah, the Yovel. And we're not living the laws of the Torah enough, the Limud HaTorah, and expressing that in the actions. And this is the seal of Torah's Kahanim. If you listen to the Torah that Hashem gives you, if you catch yourself in time, or if you avoid them in the first place, and you live the brachas in the beginning of Pesukhoisai, then you have tithing. What's tithing? Tithing is that I give a tenth of my hard work to Hashem. So you can view it that you work, make money, give a tenth to Hashem. Says the Baal HaTanya that when a person tithes their money, their tevuah, their behemoths, their animals, it means all those mundane actions they were doing for tens and hundreds of hours to make this sum of money. This sum of money produces miser. So it makes all of your actions into Kedusha, all of your work into Kedusha creating machine. That's a lesson of Teres Kayanim, that you can take all your mundane actions, whether it's in tithing, whether it's in drinking coffee, whether it's in walking to Beis Medrash and seeing somebody, walking into work and seeing another Yid, and you can make that kadosh. This is the lesson, the reality of the whole entire Teres Kayanim. The Kayanim are those who serve Hashem in the Mikdash, in the Mishkan. And their lesson to us is Mamleches Kohanim Gai Kadosh. You are all Kohanim, you are all priests. If you live the lessons of Vayikra, of Kedoshim, Kedoshim to you, you should be holy. Don't talk Lashon Hara, there's your Mitzayra. Live the Benon L'Chaveiroi. Live the Einam Levadoi of Shemitah, of Yovel, of imbuing that like Yontif, and you go and do your actions. Make sure you internalize the Torah. Bichu Koisai Teilechu. B'Yameilim. Take my messages. Don't go Alachti Mim B'Keri. If you take these messages of Emunah B'Tachon, of learning Torah, of not Chas V'Shalom ignoring Hashem's calls, please, for connection, then you can uplift everything in your life. Every single Jew can take something small every single day and say this for Hashem, as the Shulchan Aruch says, you should have kavanasai l'shem shemayim. You can turn every single action you do into kedusha, creating machines. Let's live life uplifted. Let's take our mundane and make it divine. Let's take our regular daily lives, every single second, every single aspect of it, and focus it that we are here for Hashem. We're going to learn this Torah. We're going to have one mitachon. And Be'ez Hashem, with that, we'll be zeich to see in our lives the fruits of our labor imbued